Singer-songwriter Rebecca Todd graduated from East Carolina University in 2012 with a fine arts degree. She's now making art and music full-time. She's my guest next on Americana Music Profiles. Thanks for tuning in to Americana Music Profiles. It's Season 3, brought to you by Americana Rhythm Music Magazine in print and AmericanaMusicMagazine.com online. I'm your host, Greg Tutwiler. Let's join in on another great conversation with one of the Americana music industry's super talented artists. Hi, Rebecca. Welcome to the podcast this afternoon.
Hi, thanks for having me. Glad to be here.
Yeah, you're welcome. Good to talk to you. So you are, yeah. You're in North Carolina, grew up in Benson. Are you still there?
I am actually on the coast now in a little beach town called Wilmington, North Carolina.
Oh, lucky you.
I know. I love it so much.
Yeah, that's cool. So give me a little bit of your background, how you got started in music, some influences.
Let's see. I started off, you know, as most kids do. My parents were big music enthusiasts. They were playing a lot of music around the house as I was growing up, and I was listening to a lot of whatever my dad liked, which was a lot of classic rock.
Yeah, right?
So I'm very hit to all the classics. And then I started going. My parents were not particularly religious, but I grew up in a small town, and the thing to do in a small town is go to church, mm-hmm. because there's just a lot of them everywhere.
Yeah.
So I grew up, I had some friends invite me to a Pentecostal Holiness church,
okay.
which is very soulful.
Uh-huh.
And I grew up going there and immediately enjoyed how expressive they were with their vocals, and it really turned me on to singing, and I started singing in church at a very young age. In the children's choir and choir, and even doing little solos when I was like 8 or 9, you know,
mm-hmm.
With the shaky knees on stage, really nervous. they kind of started it for me, and now I think you can hear a little bit of all of that in my stuff.
Yeah, for sure.
Very rock and blues.
Yeah.
And soul,
so. I think I read where, was it your dad that got you a guitar? Got you started playing music? Yeah.
Yeah, he got me, I think I was 11 when he first bought me the guitar, and then I didn't really start caring about guitar until I was in high school. Somewhere between 11 and 16, I kind of dabbled here and there until I got serious about it.
Taking lessons or just kind of learning on your own?
Just learning on my own. My dad played a little bit, and he showed me the basic chord structures, and I just learned on my own. I never took any lessons, which, you know, maybe I would have liked to now. I would have made the process a lot faster. But it was still fun.
When did the songwriting thing catch on for you?
You know, it's funny. I was actually writing little songs and melodies at a really young age. We have some video footage that my dad took of me when I was really young, like 6 or 7, just sitting at the table pretending to write a song. I wasn't really pretending. I was actually writing.
Yeah, that's cool.
And then eventually he kind of told me, if you're going to do this, you need to learn how to play an instrument. Otherwise, you're always going to have to ask somebody else to play for you. And he was totally right.
Yeah.
So, thanks, Dad.
So, high school, kind of dabbled in it, sang in church, and then went to college, right?
Yeah, I went to East Carolina University. I actually started out in music school and flunked out of all my classes.
Oh, no.
I never learned how to read music. quickly was like, all right, I can play music, but I cannot pass these theory classes. So let me study a different form of art. And I went into fine art with painting and drawing as my focus. And then graduated with a fine art degree.
And with the intention of using that, or when, because if I'm reading the information correct, you jumped right into a music career pretty quick, right?
Yeah. It's funny, you know, when you get an art degree, you face graduation day and everyone says, well, okay, now what are you going to do?
Yeah,
and
I agree.
Thankfully, yeah, like most of my friends were like, well, I'm going to go work in a coffee shop until I can get a job at a gallery or something. And for me, I found out that I could make a little bit of extra side money playing at coffee shops and bars in the area. So I said, well, you know, forget getting a coffee shop job. I'm just going to play in these bars every night and make some money. So I jumped right into music. And I'm actually, I'm standing in my art studio as we speak. I'm still very involved in fine art. But the music kind of was my job as soon as I graduated.
Yeah. So, you know, a lot of people do that. You know, they busk or they play in coffee shops, and it doesn't always click for everybody. So how did you jump from graduating with a fine arts degree to thinking, okay, cool, I'm going to go to work for myself as a musician to make a living? You know, there's something, you've got to have something there to make all of that work.
It's very true. My dad growing up was sort of an entrepreneur.
Mm-hmm.
So I got to see, you know, the work that is involved and how you really have to get out there and go after it on your own.
Yeah.
He was a good example of, like, no one's going to do it for you. You just have to be bold and walk right into the bar and say, hey, I'm a musician. Can I play?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
The worst that can happen is that they say no.
Right, right.
So I just started doing that. I started asking anyone that would let me if I could show up and play for tips or whatever they would pay. I traveled, I booked my own tours up and down the East Coast and slept in my cars, you know, along the way.
Yeah.
Slept in the Walmart parking lot. The things that musicians tend to do when they're starting out.
Yeah. Yeah. Was there a moment along the way there where you either thought this might not be a really good idea, or it was like, this is actually going to work, you know, maybe both.
Definitely both.
Yeah.
Absolutely both. You know, every musician has had a night where they play for no one.
Yeah.
Things have been going very well lately, and we've been playing for full rooms everywhere we go, which is just, like, wonderful to see.
Yeah.
But I can remember driving out from North Carolina, driving out to Nashville, Tennessee, and being so excited because I was going to the big music city, and, you know, I just knew that someone was going to discover me, and it was going to be great. And I got all the way out there and played in, I can't remember the name of the place, but I played for my boyfriend who was on the trip with me and the sound guy, and we had driven like 8 hours to get there.
Oh my, yeah.
So that was definitely a low point of like, okay, this is not, you know, everybody always tells you when you have a good voice, oh, why don't you go out to Nashville? I'm sure you would do so well out there.
Yeah, right.
But that's actually the hardest city to get any attention.
Sure
so
does, yeah.
I got a good dose of that.
Yeah, if you're going where everybody else is going, then you're going to be fighting for the same small piece of pie.
Right. Yeah. Absolutely. I wish everyone understood that.
Yeah. I think you figure that out. And sometimes it doesn't matter what people tell you. You've got to go find that out for yourself.
That's right. That's right.
If nothing else, at least there's a song there, right?
Yeah, maybe I'll write it as soon as we hang up.
Yeah.
Good idea.
So it sounds like you started out as a solo. At some point you became Rebecca Todd and the Odyssey. Tell me about that. The band.
Yeah, okay. So I went to school at East Carolina University, and as soon as I graduated, I started playing with a couple guys in town, and after only a few rehearsals, we decided, okay, we need to be able to promote that I'm playing, but we need to be able to differentiate between my solo gigs and my band gigs.
Yeah, okay.
So we added, you know, we tacked on in the Odyssey just to let everybody know that this is a full band show.
Mm-hmm.
And it kind of stuck. The band started off really, like, it was sort of Americana soul with even some jazz influences because we had a couple horn players.
Oh, cool.
Some guys that had studied jazz. And now it's moved into edgier rock and blues sound. And we're just having a lot of fun with our performances these days. I'm really enjoying the band shows.
Is that more what you do now than the solo show?
Yeah, absolutely. That's where my heart's at right now. I'll always love the really intimate acoustic shows, and I still do them often, mm-hmm. but I'm definitely invested in the band as of right now.
And I read where you had a really nice experience at Floyd Fest, which is in Floyd, Virginia. What got you to that stage?
Oh my goodness, that is a crazy story. I'll try to tell it quickly. I emailed the On the Rise series, which is a competition they have, and asked if we could compete to be a part of Floyd Fest. And they said, "No, I'm sorry, you waited too late, and all the slots are full." So I just said, "Oh, shoot, you know, I guess I'll have to wait until next year." And then I got an email about 2 weeks before the competition saying, "Hey, we had a band drop out. If you can get your guys together and be here in 2 weeks, you can play."
Oh, cool. Okay.
So I asked all my band members, and, like, two of them couldn't make it, so I had to get replacements, and
we
had to schedule rehearsals really quickly, and,
yeah. You
know, we were just scrambling. And then we drove all the way out to Floyd, and I had to drive, like, 12 hours that day.
Wow.
Got to Floyd, did the competition, won the competition, and they told us, "Okay, cool, you won. You're going to go to Floyd Fest this summer where you can compete for the, you know, the winning slot at Floyd Fest." We were so excited, and then I drove all the band home, and they all live in different cities, so I think I drove, like, 20 hours in 30 hours
or
something crazy.
Wow.
And to make it even crazier, just before I got home to my actual house where I was sleeping, I felt something strange. When I pulled over, the trailer had come unlocked, and all of my gear had fallen out, all of my t-shirts and my cables. The only thing that hadn't fallen out yet was my guitar.
Oh my gosh.
And it was just the worst feeling ever to look into a trailer and see the door open and it's empty.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and I was deliriously tired from all the driving, and I called my mom. She was like, "Rebecca, you're too tired. You need to go home now. I, Mom, will drive up and down the highway and find your stuff."
Wow.
And she did. She found every cable, every t-shirt.
Really?
She found all of it. Yes.
Over how far of a space was it spread out?
I think it was about 20 miles. It, like, one thing would fall out, and then, you know, we'd keep driving. Something
sure.
else would fall out. And I had no idea. I couldn't feel it. Nothing.
Yeah. That's crazy.
I know. And then
to find it all.
Off.
Yeah.
Yeah, to find it all. So then the happy ending is that, you know, number one, we found all of the gear that had fallen out, and then we went to Floyd Fest, and we're lucky enough to win the winning slot, and we're going to be going back this summer and playing on the main stage.
That's really awesome. That's cool. And that's in July, right? Yep.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah. That's so cool. Wow, that's great. Yeah, I guess it's those kinds of stories that give you plenty of ammunition, again, to write songs about.
Oh, yeah. My goodness, definitely.
Yeah, people who don't do that don't comprehend what it takes. The audience sees you guys on stage, and they appreciate the music,
right.
And then they go on to the next act, and they go home, and they go back to their life, and they have no clue what it took for the artists, you guys, to get to the event and everything that goes on behind the stage of all of that.
It's so true. There's just endless and endless amounts of work, but, you know, we do it because, number one, we're crazy. All musicians are crazy.
Yeah.
And number two, it's what makes us happy. You
sure.
know? So
yeah.
We just
yeah.
continue to pursue it.
So currently, what music, what CD, do you have two or three out? What are you promoting now?
Sure. We have one EP that I released in 2011. It was my first thing I had ever done. And then we have two full-length albums. We just released one on February 17th. It's called Crooked Lines.
cool.
And you can find it on all the things, iTunes, Spotify, blah, blah, blah.
And that, so, like, just this several days ago as we were recording this podcast.
Yep, I guess it was just a week ago that we released it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's cool. Where do you find your audience? What who is your audience? What type of folks do you find responding to your music?
Yeah, well, I grew up doing the solo folk thing with a soulful tinge to my voice. So people that like folk and Americana and soul tend to like it. And now it has a nice blues to it. We have an electric guitar player that's really amazing. So if you like blues and soul and that rootsy vibe, you know, that's kind of what we are. And we tend to kind of, I've been noticing that we have an audience of all age ranges, which is great.
Yeah.
We have, you know, young teenagers that are coming out to the shows, as well as people into their 60s and 70s, because we kind of have that classic rock vibe going on.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
So you're on the front end of this musical career. Where do you, have you thought out into the future? Where do you see this going? Do you have some tangible ideas and goals that you're headed towards?
Yeah. People ask me that a lot, and they say, like, what do you see your end goal here being? And really my only response is that I don't ever want to stop playing music, so as far as it takes me is great. I'm doing it because I love music, so, you know, if I could play for a huge crowd and make tons of money, that'd be great, but I'm happy playing for 30 people that are really into it. You know, it's fulfilling for me. So if we happen to do well, that's wonderful, and this year we've already got most of our year booked up, and we're playing a lot of festivals on the East Coast, and, you know, I'm already writing for my next album, because probably in 15 months I'll be back in the studio doing it again, or maybe even sooner. So,
So this is year-round for you? You guys are out pretty much all year?
Oh, yeah. We're pretty much at this point, all of us in the band are full-time musicians, so we're just doing it, you know, this is what we do.
Okay. And I'm assuming that at some point, you mentioned earlier, the art is, do you envision the art supporting the music supporting the art? Is there any sort of cross work going on there?
Yeah, so before we put out the album, we did a Kickstarter, and we had this huge goal of $30,000, which we had a lot of support, and we ended up making the goal. Part of the rewards for that Kickstarter were original paintings that I had done.
Oh yeah, cool.
So,
good.
Thank you. Yeah, we had about 30 people support that art reward, so it was a good way for me to continue painting while, you know, supporting the music.
Sure, yeah.
And I've had quite a few people reach out since then asking for some original art, since they didn't get a chance to get it with the Kickstarter. So it's definitely starting to be a thing where one supports the other.
Yeah.
I'm very thankful for it.
That's really cool. So how can people find you? How can they find your art? How can they find your music? Get in touch with you?
Yeah, they can go on Facebook. We're on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, Snapchat, and we have a website, RebeccaTodd.com. And on the website, you can find a link for all of the shows that are coming up. You can check out some videos. And I'm about to, because of, you know, everything I just said, I'm going to be adding a tab really soon where you can go and check out my art, which is a new thing. You know, it hasn't been something people have really wanted to see, but now people are starting to ask, so...
And the new album is Crooked Lines. I'm guessing you've got some YouTube clips they can also find you on?
Oh, yeah. We're on YouTube. We just released a single and a music video for our single off of Crooked Lines, and that single is called Hustle.
Okay.
So you can go on the website. There's a direct link to the single. You can watch the music video on YouTube. So lots of stuff in the works.
Very cool. Well, thanks, Rebecca. This has been great. Great talking to you.
Yeah, thank you so much for giving me a call. I really appreciate it, and thanks for including me.
Thanks for tuning in to another edition of The Inside Track. We sure do appreciate you sticking around. Join us again real soon when we get together with another great artist and talking about their music. Have a great day.
Hey, this is Liberty DeVito.
This is Mike Del Judas.
This is Michael Cavanaugh from Broadway's Moving Out.
This is John Jackson, director of the Billy Joel Archive.
This is Russell Javers.
This is Richie Cannata, and you're listening to Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast. It's awesome.
I'm Michael Grosvenor.
And I'm Jack Fernino.
We're lifelong Billy Joel fans who launched a podcast in 2020 celebrating the music we love.
Whether you're looking for the greatest hits or the B-sides and rarities, you'll find it all here. And if you've ever wondered what happens behind the scenes of a concert or recording session, we've got you covered.
Join us as we explore albums, tours, band members, the latest news, and more. You'll also get a unique glimpse into the music industry straight from the musicians and other professionals who help make it all happen.
Tune in to Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast, at glasshousespod.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast, is a proud member of the Pantheon Podcasts Network.